The Night Sky for May 2007 is part of the Jodcast. For the full show and the archives, go to www.jodcast.net.
Hello, well, let's begin this Night Sky section of the Jodcast by having a look at the stars that we can see in the evening. One problem, of course, is as we come to these lovely long summer days, there's less and less time to observe the night sky. And in fact, from around the middle of May in northern England, where I'm sitting now, it never gets truly dark for about 6 weeks. As the sun sets below the horizon, in the southwest we see the constellation of Gemini, the heavenly twins. And high in the south is the constellation of Leo the lion. Between them is a very faint constellation, Cancer, but with binoculars you may well see a very nice star cluster called the Beehive Cluster. Just on the boundary between Cancer and Leo is an interloper. It's the planet Saturn, and we'll come back to that later on. Low to the left of Leo, perhaps following down his tail, we come to the constellation of Virgo, with its bright star Spica rising in the southeast. In between Spica, and particularly towards the tail of Leo, is an area of the sky we call the realm of the galaxies, because here, with a reasonable-sized telescope, one can pick up hundreds of galaxies. They form part of what is called the Virgo Cluster, and it itself is the centre of the Virgo Supercluster, of which our local group, which has our Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxies as their major, as its major component, is an outlying member. So looking towards Virgo, we're looking to a region where the sky is filled with galaxies. Sadly, you need a telescope to see them. If we look high overhead this month, we see Ursa Major, the Great Bear. But the part that's most obvious, and many people call it a constellation in its own right, which it isn't, is what we call the plough and what the Americans call the Big Dipper, after the ladle used by the farmhouse ladies as the workmen came in for lunch. If you look at the central star of the tail of the bear, you may, if your sight is reasonable, see there's a companion. Mizar is the bright star that's fairly obvious, and the fainter star nearby is called Alcor, and together they're the horse and rider. You may well spot that with your unaided eye, but a pair of binoculars will make it very obvious. If, however, you then actually use a small telescope, you see that Mizar is itself a double star, and in the field of view, there's actually a relatively faint red star. It has an interesting name. It's called Sidus Ludovicianum. It was actually named after Ernst Ludwig V by a not very good observer who mistook it for a planet. But Alcor, the double Mizar, and Sidus Ludovicianum make a very nice little field of view for a small telescope. So now let's move on to the planets. I've already mentioned Saturn. It's in the constellation of Leo, very close to the boundary with Cancer, about 11 degrees to the right of the brightest star of Leo, which is called Regulus. Its magnitude is about plus 0.4, so it's still pretty bright, though as it's getting further away from us, it's now in fact reducing. It'll be about plus 0.5 by the end of May. And the globe sustains an angle of about 18 arc seconds. Still quite a bit of detail to see if there's a night sky with good seeing if you have a small telescope. The rings are closing. They're about 13 degrees from edge on, so Saturn's actually shining less brightly than it was a few years ago, and that will continue to reduce for a few more years. If you do have a small telescope, you'll easily see Saturn's largest moon, which is called Titan. Now, Mercury is not a planet we often see. It's very close to the Sun. It's often lost in the glare of the Sun. But at the end of this month, about the last week or so, it actually has one of the best apparitions, as they're called, this year, when it rises up in the sky and can be seen about 30 minutes after sunset, between where the sun has set and the very bright planet Venus, which we shall come to. What you need to do to see it is to get a location with a very good low western horizon, be there before sunset, and see where the sun actually sets. Then look up to the left of that position, and as the brightness of the sky gradually falls, you should begin to see Mercury. A pair of binoculars will certainly help. Mars, I'm afraid, doesn't have a good month. It's barely visible just before dawn, close to the southeastern horizon, passing from Aquarius into Pisces. With a disk just over 5 arc seconds across, there are no details to be seen, even though it's at magnitude 1. We're going to have to wait a few more months before we see it well towards the latter part of this year. On the other hand, no one can have failed to spot the planet Venus in the last few weeks. It's dominating the western sky after sunset, and it's rising to one of the highest elevations above the horizon that we ever see. The highest is about the very end of May. The magnitude's about -4. It's interesting because it stays at about -4 for quite a long time, even though the amount of the disk that is in fact lit by the sun is actually reducing, because as it gets nearer, the apparent size of the area of Venus that we see stays about constant. So although less of the disk is illuminated, it becomes a crescent. That crescent is much larger because Venus is coming towards us. It's the fact that Galileo Galilei was able to observe an almost full phase of Venus that proved that Venus must in fact orbit the Sun and not orbit the Earth. I usually finish this little section of the Jodcast with some highlights of the month. I can't claim there's anything particularly special this month. On the 19th of May, a thin crescent moon with about 13% of the surface illuminated is just 3 degrees away from the planet Venus. They're both lying in the constellation of Gemini, the heavenly twins. That will make a very nice pairing and well worth looking out for, just with your eyes, or even better, with a pair of binoculars. The moon, many astronomers regard as a nuisance, because when it's bright, the sky is never dark, and you can't see these lovely faint fuzzies, as we call them, distant galaxies. But on the other hand, it's quite a nice thing to observe itself, and it's best to observe around first or last quarter, when about half of the moon is illuminated. And along the terminator, the craters show up with very great detail. The shadows are long, and it really looks very lovely. So you might try and have a look at the moon around the 23rd of May, which is first quarter, and a small telescope will show you an amazing amount of detail. Well, it's a lovely spring day here at Jodrell Bank, and you might have heard our mower mowing the grass outside. We need a big red light to perhaps say recording in progress. But just to finish off, I've said quite often, it's never been a better time to be an amateur astronomer. Really good telescopes can be bought for surprisingly little. In the UK, there's a Skywatcher 1:30 p.m., a 5-inch paraboloid Newtonian telescope, which is motorized, so that once you've actually got it observing an object, it will track it across the sky. And that can be got for under £200. So in the many magazines, the Sky at Night magazine, Astronomy Now, we have available in the UK, have a look at the adverts and have a go at making some observations yourself. Good hunting.